Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Mathens.
And I'm Robert Winters.
Still Robert. Okay.
Yeah. So let's see. So we were speaking a little bit about some of the things that's at the budget hearings as well as city council meetings.
From last week, yeah.
And there are other things I certainly will speak to. One other item that I thought was interesting, I think when they had the law department on.
That was last week, right? Yes, last week.
So they, you know, again, there's definitely this sort of tussle going on in terms of power.
Yeah.
It's kind of intertwined with this whole issue of whether city councilors should have their own, you know, free hand to their own lawyers or whatever, which I don't think is going to happen unless they change the charter. But there was also this, you know, they keep bringing up this matter, and it was a subject of something on the city council agenda last night, which was this unsettled matter about acoustic music being allowed in non-traditional locations, which actually originally grew out of a city council order, I believe, from Jan Devereaux.
Really?
In a previous term.
Okay. All right.
And it's just been sort of lingering there. And then eventually the license commission offered an opinion, I think, in February. That pretty much said, like, you know, well, there are reasons why we don't want to just say, do what you like. In short, it's basically because there are, you know, people like me, actually, quite honestly, who lives next to a commercial establishment which doesn't have amplified music. And if they could just do what they want, they might just decide to, you know, have music venues out the back and till 1 a.m. or something like that. And, you know, there are reasons why we have a license commission. And that was kind of their main point. And, but the council didn't like it because they're kind of enamored of this notion that, you know, you want to promote, you know, give businesses a lot more flexibility to do well. And hey, you're not going to get any argument from me on the idea, but still, I think the license commission actually came through with a proposal. It said, we'll give you a very streamlined process, but this way we at least have the opportunity to basically make sure everything's good.
Yeah.
You know, and so it'll be cheap and easy. But, you know, there's still at least some role for a license commission.
I think they've modified the fees or the time period.
So it's actually pretty cheap and easy.
So was that approved? Did they agree with that?
I think Vice Mayor Mallon kind of begrudgingly said, well, I'm not happy with this. This is not right. Blah, 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 blah. There's nothing I can do about it. So I'm just going to let it lie. And she kind of, you know, disappeared off and off. But the thing is, the original communication, which had been lying on the table for months, plus the latest, because there had been a more recent one where they came up with this proposal, that was on the city manager's agenda last night. And they heard them and they just basically, placed them on file.
Okay.
So, the issue hasn't gone away, but, but the thing is, it's actually kind of, if you think about it, it's related to something kind of entirely different, which is, you know, right now, because the numbers for COVID have been dropping like a stone.
Yeah.
And the governor is lifting many of the restrictions as of, I think, was it May 29th?
May 29th, like
29th.
It was supposed to be August 1st and then whatever,
Yeah, I mean, you're not obliged to go to 100% capacity, but you may go to 100% capacity.
I know, that was good. Yeah, go from 25 to 100. That was a little much, but hey.
I think it's based on this.
I'm not going to any baseball games. Maybe you are.
Right.
I don't go to them anyway. They're too expensive.
Right. But the thing is that during this whole period, and and by the way, the declaration of emergency is expected to be lifted in mid-June.
Oh, is that now, different then?
Yes. No, it's good. No, because let's be clear that under emergency declarations from governor, there are certain things that have been permitted that would not normally be permitted.
Oh.
Some of them are things which I think everybody go, let's do something. Like right now, they allowed you to get drinks to go from various bars.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
And right now, that's not okay.
All right.
It's okay right now, but as of mid-June, you wouldn't be able to do that. And I think a lot of the places say, hey, we kind of like being able to do this and we'd like to continue. So there's restaurant associations are lobbying the state legislature.
Oh,
apparently
that's interesting.
Their legislatures are, you know, they're toiling away now to trying to find a way to change the rules to allow some of these things that were put in during emergency rules to be able to continue.
It's somewhat related to the whole mail-in voting type thing.
Okay, see, now I was about to mention that. So the thing is that the only reason why we were able to have what is sometimes called no excuse absentee voting, which was basically the official name for the early vote, not the early voting, but the mail-in voting. Yeah, that would normally be prohibited, but and may require a state constitutional amendment. Even though that sounds crazy, but it may. But the reason why it was permitted was that the state legislature invoked Americans with Disabilities Act provisions to say that the you know, concern about COVID infection was a disabling condition that warranted this allowance for everybody. Now, come June 15th, the emergency declaration is lifted, then the legal basis for, because it says in the state law that was passed, until the end of the state of emergency. That was extended. It was actually supposed to expire sooner. They actually extended it till the summer. So that springtime elections for cities and some cities and towns
could
go ahead with mail-in voting.
So what's happening with that? Like, what's Galvin?
I don't know. I mean, Galvin says he's in favor of it all, but the thing is that if it indeed is the case, and it may well be, that there are that under the letter of the law, the state constitution doesn't permit it, then the state legislature can't just say, well, let it go anyway.
So they'd have to come up with legislation to change it?
They might have to propose a constitutional amendment.
It's a constitutional amendment. Okay, because it's in the IC.
Now, I'm not 100% sure if that's the case, but you know, but don't be too shocked if a few months from now, there's a lot of controversy about whether there's going to be allowable mail-in voting. Of course, this year, you know, with the COVID numbers dropping rather nicely, maybe it's going to be less of an issue. Maybe people will, we don't like, the convenience of it, but we don't feel the emergency.
But you can still request, but if it's a no excuse absentee voting, you can still request a ballot by mail or no?
Look, let's be honest, right? There are plenty of people who apply for absentee voting who say, oh, I'm going to be out of town, whether they are or not, or, you know, I'm going in for an operation, you know, so I need to do it this way. Nobody's going to check you and, you know, call your mommy and daddy and say, is this person really? No, that's not going to happen, really. So you could do it, but you have to probably bend the rules as an individual.
But you know, what's really disturbing about all this is that I consider we're a pretty liberal state, city, of course, and look what's happening around the country. It's even harder. And if we're discussing it, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, it's going to be a nightmare.
You know, it's an interesting topic, the whole matter of, you know, restricting access to voting.
Yeah.
But one thing that is often lost because of the partisanship, depending on who's reporting it.
That's true.
Either way, I mean, I'm talking either way here.
Yeah, right.
Is that on one side, they make it out as though it's the, you know, this is the worst human beings on the planet. They're restricting this and whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and then you'll hear the opposite on another network.
Yeah.
But the truth is that many across the country, many of the rules that were put in place last year were done under emergency rules.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They all were. Yeah. Right. Right.
Right. And so a lot of voter access was dramatically expanded. Yeah. And there were some legal questions, but the courts have adjudicated said, but they were fine.
But the thing because is when you see that something that has worked though, they want to deny it now.
True. But the thing is that if you had, for example, if there were no drop boxes for mail-in ballots before last year.
No, I agree. I see what you're saying. No, you're absolutely right.
And then they put in 500 of them.
Yeah, it's not like they're taking away something that was always there. It was an emergency thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing is that after the emergency passes or lessens, it is right and proper that you should say, okay, how much of this should we be retaining?
Exactly.
How much of this was great and whatever. So the notion that somehow it's a little more restrictive than it was last year is not something that should surprise or alarm anyone.
Right. That is true. People forget that part. Right. Except
and if the changes are being done fairly. So in other words, we're going to still allow many of them in certain neighborhoods But we're going to, we heard that's a real heavy Democratic ward. So we're going to make sure it's
that's
hard
where
as
you
possible.
See the glaring.
That's the problem. I mean,
that's exactly. Yeah. That's true.
But, right. You know, the truth is that it's just the fact that it, there may be a somewhat less access is in itself something I don't think should be alarming to people. It's just a matter of, is this all being done fair and square? You know, that's really the issue. So, but anyway, there's, you know, there was some rhetoric at the city council meeting last night about, what's going to happen when the state of emergency ends? Well, the eviction moratorium, which has been in existence, there's no, that will no longer be in effect as state law. And then the, and it's certainly the CDC lost their, the righteousness of being able to have that in place nationally. That was legally challenged. And so that's not in effect.
Yeah, but that was over anyway in October, wasn't it?
Yes. No. It carried over. Right.
It did.
But the thing is that,
I didn't know that.
You know, there are some people in the city council who think, well, we'd like to extend the eviction moratorium, you know, here anyway. And I go, well,
you can't do
it. That's in the absence of a declared state of emergency, you're violating state law at that point. And the city manager says, I do not want anybody to have any illusions about our ability to extend this.
Yeah.
You know? Now, on the other hand, I don't think that we're going to be in any more of a housing crisis.
No, because we've been on top of this with you know, Maura and her whole department and humans, you know, have been really on top of people threat, you know.
Yes. Yeah. So I don't think we're in a bad place.
Well, but I don't really know. I can't say that because a lot of, you know, I don't know what's going on in the courts. So,
yeah, but you know, I think that for some, if somebody thinks, well, we want to continue it anyway, you can't just
I mean,
snap your fingers and make things so. Yeah. So, but the thing is that there was some, I think, some real misunderstandings of last night's meeting about things like right now we have outdoor patios in a lot of places, extending restaurants.
Yeah.
They were all done because of the COVID emergency. Mm-hmm. Now, some people seem to think that, well, I guess we just have to get rid of those now. That's not true.
No.
Many of these are questions that—
These are good ideas that have now become, hey, this works in a lot of it.
Right.
And I think it's been great, actually.
It's been absolutely fabulous.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't—
Central Square probably is as good as any. But the thing is that to whatever degree the superintendent of streets within the public works department and the traffic department have some jurisdiction over how to allocate the roadway, which obviously they've been addressing that in talking
and
about
sidewalks too, because some places they're using sidewalks. Yeah.
But you know, the thing is reconfiguring things for bike lanes and whatever, something that's been ongoing for a long while now.
Yep.
You know, so they have a lot of authority. I think there are some issues, maybe. Yep. Potentially, like for example, if Mass Ave is technically Massachusetts State Route 2A, do you have, you know, and if there are MBTA bus lines running on it, you know, if there are certain, because of its classification as a state road or—
Actually, now that you say that, how is the one, going through CT1 or whatever, it goes right through Central Square, how are they adapting to all that, those,
I think there seems to be adequate room
I mean, it's reduced the lanes on that part of Mass Ave, but that's all right.
It seems to work. I mean, there is some concern that if traffic rebounds to levels, in some regards, it is. Will we start to encounter, you know, just constant congestion all the time, in which case the state might say, well, we're not okay with keeping it all restricted. So there may be some issues.
Yeah.
But I think right now there's a petition campaign going on about maintaining the outdoor patios and some of the street restrictions, the closures or narrowing of streets in order to accommodate them, because some businesses have decided even when they can go, everybody can go back indoors again, they kind of like
it. Well, they have a patio before. I mean, people like to eat outdoors if the weather's
nice. I was speaking with somebody today who pointed out there are some places that actually it doubles their capacity by having that out there.
That's a good point. So, I think that's one of the nice things to come out of this. I mean, I don't eat out a lot, but
I agree.
So now,
you know, in the coming weeks, you know, some decisions are going to have to be made about what to extend, how to extend. And also there are also issues of, shall we make this more of a permanent thing? I mean, there is definitely discussion about having the concept of the outdoor patios extending out to the street be something that continues to next year and beyond.
But what does that mean? Does it have to be written into an ordinance? How does that work?
Well, I think for the most part, if it's a city-owned street, I think it's just a matter of having an understanding with the city that this is something that we want to do. You know,
so it doesn't require changing licensing or zoning or anything.
I don't think
like
so.
That.
No, okay. I'm pretty sure. Well, I mean, there may be certain activities that we kind of allowed that, you know, but you know, the thing is, they can serve alcohol out on as long as it's
Places have had those set outs already. I mean, I think Tavern before the pandemic had
ridiculous rules about you had to be enclosed in a steel cage.
Well, that if you're serving alcohol, that's true.
Yeah. So, you know, so I think there are some details that need to be worked out here, but I think there seems to be some consensus emerging that has worked out to be a positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, anybody, especially on a weekend, if you go through Central Square and you see all the activity extending out into the sidewalks, and you run into your friends on the sidewalks because they're not hidden away inside the building. It's kind of a good thing. And, you know, and I don't think it's harmed the traffic immeasurably. So, you know,
Robert, this leads to that policy order that was charter-righted and then about Central Square and the bid and closing Friday.
So there was one that was on the charter right last week.
Well,
leftover from the previous week, having to do with closure of Massachusetts Avenue from Prospect Street down to Sydney Street on
Every Friday and Saturday night.
Friday, Saturday night from 7 p.m. to 1 a.m.
Yeah.
Now, and then there are some counselors rather, you know, loudly and proudly declared that I've okayed this with this the business improvement district. They think this is wonderful. It's not there. Believe me, there is not clear consensus about that at all.
No.
You know, the you know, and you know, if you think of, there have been ideas about complete street closures and making pedestrian only zones over the years in various locations, including Harvard Square. But
that came up last night.
You might think that's a good thing, but you know, if it basically causes everybody to go around that location,
it's not good.
It actually can be a negative too.
Exactly.
And you know, having the MBTA buses rerouted and just regular traffic. And besides, you know, I would argue that the activity in the evenings, Friday, Saturday, is not the middle of the street. It's the sidewalks and the clubs.
Right. And it'll be Starlight Square. And it's not
Starlight Square.
Yes. It might be nice to walk in the street, but I don't think you have to. I don't think it's prevent. In fact, there's probably less traffic.
With only one lane in each direction, it's an easily navigable roadway now. And I think that.
I mean, I think it would be very difficult to do it every weekend. I like your suggestion
there's other things,
for special times, you know.
Well, there was also an acknowledgement by some that, you know, if you're going to close it, you can't just have, you have just an empty pavement out there. You're obliged to do programming, which means, you know, and
but does it say that? Why do you have to do programming? Isn't it more to just have more of a promenade or whatever? Alana brought that up and like, that's putting a lot of onus onto the,
Improvement District people from the ambassadors to the executive director, everybody involved, it's just been great. But the thing is that, you know, they're not supermen and superwomen. You know, the thing is they have a lot of irons in the fire. They're pretty busy doing a lot of things. So, if they were the ones who came forward with a proposal, then I would take it a lot more seriously. You know, because they say, we're willing to take this on. We think this is great. We've got some great ideas. You know, let us do it. All right.
I got the impression it was Mark McGovern and Denise Simmons that proposed the policy order, right?
You know, I'm not so sure that was all done with full consensus of people in the business community at all.
He claimed, because Mark had a thing about Quentin taking over and saying, I have spoken with
him. But you see, what you're really starting to see, and this is sort of a separate topic, but you're seeing election year politics starting to bubble up in numerous ways. So to whatever degree, some things have worked out well in Central Square.
Yep.
There are several people who want to be identified with that. Now, the truth of the matter is, it's not been city councilors who've been the key to the success of getting through this in Central Square. It's the people associated with the business improvement district and city staff.
Right, but really I would give some credit to like Alana Mal, and she's been behind a lot of the bid stuff too. I mean, supporting Central Square. All right, whatever.
They all support it.
Okay, I know. But
okay, I'll leave it at that.
All right.
You know, but the lifting is done by others. The logistics done by others. Most and of the money, ideas, virtually all of the ideas, others. You know,
has the city given any money towards this?
You know, the city has been very good and creative about this. Obviously, you know, going through COVID, you know, there are, and actually that was an item on city council agenda having to do with what can you do with free cash?
You can't just say,
well, we like this business. We want them to survive.
Right. So the same old thing. You have to have a set, like the mayor's relief fund was funded by, you know,
that's right. It's an independent source. Yeah, that's right. Then,
yeah, or, I thought they cleared that up pretty well.
Or right. And also there was a lot of fee for services. So you could keep restaurants going by basically employing them to help in feeding programs. So the city's been brilliant, actually.
Right. Trying to get
in finding creative ways to do this. You know, but it's not been this has not been a political matter. No. This is not about political initiatives. This is about people within a business community desperately trying to find ways to
all right, so let me ask you something. So Starlight Square, that parking lot, does the city own that?
Yes, it does. And
that's a big in-kind donation in a way.
It absolutely is. You bet.
So there you go.
And you know, and the city has actually used real money to do it because, you know, because they weren't giving it to an individual. You know, they were doing it for public services and things. But by the way, there is they've been having some events over this past weekend at Starlight Square.
Yeah.
You know, some school kids and whatever I saw going on there. They're having a bit of an opening, soft opening tomorrow.
I guess that's tomorrow. Yeah. But it's a private event. I don't know what that
means. Yeah. But now it'll be officially open really through the rest of the year. There is a movement now
there's a whole schedule of stuff. It's
right. But there's a movement now to find a way to make Starlight Square kind of to re-envision it in the long term. And to sort of keep an event, you know, a venue like this.
I thought that was a given. No,
it's not a given. It's still a parking lot underneath. At this point, there would be great controversy if it would just to disappear. But you know, you can't just have it be, you know, scrim wrapped around some metal bars forevermore. You've got to sort of do it at all. Maybe
it's an open air theater. I don't know. There's parking on the other side. They're closing Norfolk Street now for the farmers market. I was there yesterday.
Right.
I didn't think about that. So scrim implies temporary. That's true.
Yeah. So we'll see. You know.
All right.
There are some elaborate ideas I've heard. You know, of having a, you know, more of a structured facility there. You could have underground parking.
Yeah, but wait, we've got the foundry building going on. We've got
this. I know, it's probably not the best time to be initiating.
Yeah, I like the fact that this is an amphitheater, and if it can be easily maybe dismantled and just open for certain months, I could see that. Yeah.
So anyway, so that'll be once the emergency period is over, I think we can kind of look forward to some of that happening. By the way, I'm not going to show any pictures or anything now, but just want to mention that, you know, there actually have been, you know, there's the election season is perking up a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There are some new candidates emerging. There's one person who had kind of was pulled papers, but then this was Dana Bolster is actually having a real kickoff event. Mm-hmm. Soon. I think I might have mentioned Roy Ribitsky.
On your list. Yeah. I don't think there's anybody since last year.
Paul Toner, it's just really a matter of days before he's officially in.
You keep saying that, though. I don't know.
He'll be there. And then a fellow named Robert Extert, I think is how it's pronounced. I'm not sure. Who lists himself on his LinkedIn page as poker player.
He's not only a real qualification to be a city.
But he's not only filed the paperwork to have a campaign, but also opened a campaign bank account. So.
Oh, okay.
Put $80 in it. Okay, so you know, so we're getting up there. So the field is not entirely set. I haven't heard much yet about school committee interests.
Yeah, there's only one name there now. Yeah.
One new challenger.
Challenger, you don't, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, this is a way to go. But, you know, I think we are in May now. Then come June, remember? End of June.
And then they have to,
month is when you can pick up your papers and start.
Then you really know, signatures, right?
And then we know for sure. But we're getting close. This is definitely the time of year when you start getting announcements about kickoff.
How many
events.
Signatures do you need?
50. 50 valid signatures.
And you can only sign one person's page?
That's right. Well, you could sign, but it's whoever turns that signature
first. That's right. That gets credited
to that candidate. Right. And then any subsequent ones are invalid.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, so it's happening slowly but surely. There was Nicola Williams had a kickoff event.
I guess it was her birthday.
Down the street from my house. Yeah, it was
birthday
event. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, you know, it's you're starting to see more of it. But the thing I was mentioning earlier, and I don't want to dwell on it too much, but it's not just the campaign events. It's also the rhetoric that is wending its way into city council meetings. Mm. People are going to try and take credit for things or get into fights. Part of the way it works under proportional representation, we could do multiple shows on this whole topic, that you want to be the champion of some constituency
issue. Is like 1,800 votes to get started.
Thing is that you don't want to be everybody's number two vote. You want to be you want to be top dog on an issue or
you better get that number two too, though.
That's what gets you in over the top ultimately. Yeah. But although you don't want to, you can be fed or you can be a feeder.
Oh.
And a lot of aspiring candidates.
You can be a follower or a leader. There we go.
Right. That's right. You know. So you want to be the top dog. Yeah. I'm the mayor of Central Square, or some other designation.
Okay, Robert, we've got 15 seconds left, so. I think our next show is right after Memorial Day, so there won't be any.
First Tuesday in June.
So. Yeah, so we'll have something to say. Right. I don't know what, but yet. We still have a few seconds.
Until then, happy trails.
Okay, bye.